I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code PODCAST10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate that end product to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. With more than 15 years of experience at Whole Foods Market, Jamie Yale Katz serves as a voice for the company's quality standards, providing the big picture on Whole Foods Market's 40 plus years of work in the natural and organic food industry. She advises, strategizes, and communicates with multiple stakeholders on the ins and outs of ingredient and sourcing standards, from everything from product formulation to messaging. A writer by trade and spirit, she's a pro at translating complex technical information about Whole Foods standards in language that resonates with the team members and customers. So today I'm bringing her on to explain the quality standards that Whole Foods holds and how they push the envelope for sourcing the right ingredients. Jamie, I am so glad to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this interview for so long. Thank you for being here and for being willing to tell your story.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I feel like I've gotten through some type of fortress or castle to find you deep in the corporate world of Whole Foods, all the way up to the tippy top of quality. And now I can ask you all the questions I've been dying to know all about Whole Foods.
I know some of them. I won't know all of them, the answers, but I'm going to try.
Well, let's tell your story, because you didn't start at the top. You didn't start as the senior advisor of global quality standards at Whole Foods Market. You started in a store.
I did.
Which I love, by the way, because they've given you the opportunity to work your way to the top.
Well, that's actually a really common story at Whole Foods Market, coming up from bottom to top, which is a kind of an awkward phrase to say, but
it's important.
It is important. And that's actually one of the things that kept me at Whole Foods. So I got a degree in English and creative writing. My intention was to my professional life to be as a creative artist, to write, produce, do, you know, whatever, podcasting, although I didn't know that existed and when I graduated. And I was between New York and Chicago. I feel like I'm a New York girl in my heart in some ways, even though I grew up in the Midwest. People always think I'm from New York, and sometimes they're, I think that's an underhanded insult, and sometimes I always take it as a compliment. Yeah. And so my family was in Chicago. I was in New York. They wanted me back in Chicago. I was just trying to figure out how to feed myself and be a writer. And so I was in Chicago for the holidays, and I thought, I always loved Whole Foods. I was in my first one, and I stumbled into the first one in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was at U of M and was like, what is this place? Mm-hmm. And I just one day on a whim walked into a store in downtown Chicago, and they hired me on the spot, and I was a cashier and a bagger, not something, you know, my parents thought I would be with my college degree. And I thought I'd just be there for the holidays. But the more I stayed, the more I fell in love, particularly with the people. I've gotten to work with the most amazing people over the last 15 years from all walks of life and interests and experiences. And that's been amazing. And I started to get an interest in food. You know, I didn't know what quinoa was when I started there. I was an off and on again, you know, carb heavy college vegetarian. And so I wasn't a very good cashier because I talked too much. And so my lines would be a little bit slow, or I was small and trying to shag carts in the parking lot and get ankle bites and get them, a lot of them, into an elevator. It wasn't my best skill, but what I was really good was sponging up information. So I became a team trainer, and then I got recruited into learning and development. And I worked for many years in two different stores as an in-store educator. So full-time, I was supporting team members on learning about quinoa, learning about organic standards, learning about food safety. And I continued learning and having a real passion and commitment to our standards. And that landed me an interview and actually being actively recruited to my dream team at Whole Foods Market, which is Global Quality Standards. One of our past team leaders was giving a talk in Chicago, and I asked a question during his presentation about a legal case, and that he was giving expert testimony in, and he was like, why do you know about that?
Tell me, what was the legal case?
I don't remember. It was something I had read about in the New Yorker, and I had asked him about, I actually didn't know he was giving testimony, but I had asked him about it and then found out later. But from there, I got recruited and I got hired, and I moved to Austin, and I've been here 7 years, and it keeps getting better and better. And it's such a gift, my work and what I get to do every day, but also having worked in the stores is something I really treasure that time and that connection to customers and team members in a way I just don't get as much now, being in an office pre-pandemic, doing the work we do, which is so meaningful to me, that I do miss that sometimes.
Oh, I would say as a Whole Foods shopper, I know the smiley cashiers and baggers and and I lived behind, and when I was in Los Angeles and we were in a condo there, I lived behind on Montana, behind the Brentwood location, and knew all of my cashiers and baggers by name. Like I felt like I was in, like, it felt like, I don't know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or something.
Yeah.
It was really wonderful. And like to know, they knew Sebastian, they saw him from when I was pregnant all the way through until he was 18 months. And there was one cashier, Neil, that like literally used to be like, Bash, how's it going? Like, it was such a special place to me. But I'm really interested in understanding the ethos really of the quality standards that Whole Foods has, because I think, you know, as a mom, it's really important to know like what you're buying. And there's so much time spent looking at labels and trying to decipher, like, is this good? Is this healthy? Is this, what's in this? So I kind of would love to dive into the ethos of Whole Foods quality standards and some of the things that you and your team are doing to source. And I'm also interested, has that changed since, you know, Amazon has purchased you? Like, I just like want to get into it and understand like what your role is.
Let's do it. These are the things, you know, I get paid to talk about Whole Foods Market and I love it. Yeah. So, let's get into it.
Okay, cool. Like, where do you start when it comes to sourcing product and like, what's the ethos?
You know, I would say it's a couple of things. One, the purpose of both Whole Foods Market is to nourish people and the planet. We say Whole Foods, Whole People, Whole Planet. And that's the foundation. But I really think about it as connection, right? We're connecting suppliers to consumers. And we take that responsibility really seriously. When we opened in 1980, we knew we wanted to be different. And we took on the challenge of pushing the industry, pushing suppliers, pushing customers forward. And we've done that. I would argue that you can't buy organic orange juice in a rando gas station in middle America if not for the work of Whole Foods Market, because I think we helped consumers understand what options there were. We've created supply and demand, and we've pushed everyone forward. And we proved to other retailers, no, consumers do want this. They do want higher quality, and they will pay for it. And you can be profitable as a business. And I think until Whole Foods Market set that example and started pushing, no one was really doing that. We take that really seriously. And the other thing I would add is, while we are advocates for our consumers, it's also about our suppliers. And they're the ones actually doing the hard work. We ask a lot of them. And so it can't just be about what we want to do. It also has to be about them and where they are and the innovations they're making. And so finding the balance between how do we push and sometimes push hard, but also be connected to the industry, understand what it takes to actually do that and create standards that our suppliers can meet, because you're not pushing the industry if no one can reach the bar that you've set. And so I think that's really also at the heart of what we're doing, sort of that multi-stakeholder model.
Can you give me an example of how that works with a specific product category or a specific product where you guys have said, this needs to be better, or we need to push our suppliers to do something because our consumers want it and it's better for the whole planet?
Yeah, a few different ways. I think that happens with ingredient standards. And when we take an ingredient, so we maintain acceptable and unacceptable ingredient standards in food, supplements, household cleaning, and body care. And what that means is, if you are a mom and you don't want high fructose corn syrup, once you walk in the doors at Whole Foods Market, it's not there. It's not anywhere in the store. You do not have to look for that on a label. And so it could be that we have ingredients over time that were acceptable that are going to become unacceptable. So let's take an example that you know about in your work in nutrition and health coaching, and that's partially hydrogenated fats. Mm-hmm. So partially hydrogenated fats create artificial trans fats. It's different than a trans fat in an animal product. Mm-hmm. And they've been linked to impacts on cardiovascular health, right? But back in like the 70s and 80s, margarine was all the rage.
Right.
And it was going to save you. It was healthy. It wasn't butter.
Yeah.
And what was great about them, it allows you to take a vegetable oil, make it solid at room temperature. It creates a similar mouthfeel, right? Nobody wants the pie crust made with vegetable shortening if it's not as flaky as it is with butter or lard. Right. And it extended shelf life and it made products cheaper. We had it on shelf at a Whole Foods Market. But in the late 90s, our team started, before I was there, started tracking some of these studies that were coming out and decided it has to go. And so then you're talking to suppliers and you're talking about, how long is it going to take? This is happening. How long is it going to take you to reformulate? How much time are you going to need to test your product? How much time to change your label and move through your inventory? And so we did all of that, and that we accomplished that by the end of 2003. And then here comes the FDA in 2015 and says, oh yeah, those are bad. Let's get them out of food. And they are just completing compliance on that.
Just 12 years behind you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an example of a way where, and that happens a lot, you know, you have to adapt and you learn new information. You make a standard and then you find out, ooh, we need to make some changes there. We need to shift. And that can happen in ingredients, but that can also happen in sourcing standards like meat or seafood.
Can we talk about sourcing meat and seafood, and what are the, like, some of the toughest areas to source for Whole Foods Market?
Well, that example of hydrogenated fats, it can actually happen in any category. So there's two things, and then we'll talk about meat and seafood. One, if you're a supplier that approaches us and we look at your, our buyer looks at your ingredients and says, oh, you have ingredients that are unacceptable at Whole Foods Market, you would have to reformulate to get in. Mm-hmm. And some suppliers are willing to do that. So that can make it a challenge, right? Because that can extend a timeline. Or, and the interesting thing about that is sometimes they'll change just for us and not the rest of their line. And so that means the product is unique to Whole Foods Market and our shoppers, but you wouldn't necessarily know that as a consumer. In meat and seafood, I think it's that the standards are so rigorous or so complex. And so a supplier has to really be willing. Some of them are already doing that. And so when you meet or you find them, it's not as big of a leap. But other times you're working hand in hand, and that's financial cost to them. It's their sweat equity. And so that can be, we want to have the top. And so it's a longer conversation than just picking up anyone.
Right. When it comes to sourcing across the board and the supplier comes to you and says, hey, here's my product. Here's how we create it. And here's where it's made. How deep do you guys go in regards to, like, are you touching down on the farm to like see what's happening? Are you getting reports? Like, what is it that you guys are looking for when it comes to accepting a product?
Well, so it depends on the category, right? So a multi-ingredient product, let's say in the grocery aisles and the cereal aisle, your main focus is the ingredient standards, right? Mm-hmm. If you're talking about seafood or meat or animal welfare standards for laying hens, then you're talking about a much deeper connection and relationship. You are talking about people being on the ground. You're talking about audits or third-party verifications to make sure those standards, and those programs vary by department, but those standards are being met. Or something that I know you're interested in, Source for Good, also is a much deeper connection and relationship. Because you're connecting directly with the supplier that produces that food. Whereas if we're talking about, you know, a mac and cheese, we're not connected to necessarily to the grower of the semolina that went into the pasta that's added to the cheese powder, right? You're talking about a lot of people coming together to manufacture product. And so our connection there is to the supplier of the finished product. Whereas again, in meat or seafood or Source for Good or a local produce supplier, then you're much more directly connected to the farm and the production.
Yeah. Let's go deep on Source for Good because I love that program and it's something that I know you probably love it because it's a specialty quality standards program. But can you explain what Source for Good is and what people should look for when they are?
Yeah. So in a nutshell, Source for Good supports workers, communities, and the environment where the product is sourced. This was a program we started in 2007. At the time, we called it Whole Trade Guarantee. And it's recently been through sort of an upgrade revamp because we want to expand it. It's really been concentrated in produce and floral. We now have a couple of seafood products that are Source for Good. But it's really about thinking beyond just the banana hitting your cart as a consumer and who's growing that banana. What are they making and what are the conditions there? And we work with 5 international certifiers because they're qualified in that work. So we're deep into it. We want to know what's happening at that farm. We want to know what they're working on, what their mission is, what the results are. But we also need that expertise to be on the ground there. So a couple examples are probably the Source for Good product that is nearest and dearest to my heart is Earth Bananas. Earth Bananas is from Earth University in Costa Rica. We've been working with them, I think, since the 90s. They were the very first Whole Trade Guarantee product, was again the original name of the program. And it's a one-of-a-kind school in Costa Rica. It's an acronym in Spanish, which I know what it stands for, but I will not hurt your listeners' ears by trying to tell you it. But essentially they bring students in and teach them really how to be change agents in their communities, how to go back and help farm and produce food in a way that's going to sustain it over, you know, ideally multiple generations instead of a resource being used up rather quickly. So they are studying agriculture, but they're also studying how to start businesses and how to run them. And so when Earth got started, there was a banana farm on the property that environmental consultants told them to get rid of because of the degradation of the soil. And they kept it and they rehabilitated it. And so they're doing two things. They have this laboratory for their students, but the workers, which I've met those workers, I've been on that farm, I was in the production facility, have, you know, fair wages and better working conditions and different premiums that they can utilize to improve in their community. Earth Bananas is Rainforest Alliance certified. They do a lot of environmental pioneering. And I got to go there in 2008 through one of our nonprofits, Whole Planet Foundation. So when I buy those bananas, they taste better to me just because I've been there. Another farm that I think is really, I mean, we have so many amazing producers, but there's an organic grower in Mexico called Campos Borges. And not only are they doing, you know, are they fair trade certified and growing organic, but they're also working in regenerative agriculture and offering different benefits to their workers and really creating their fourth generation family farm. And so that's really amazing. We're talking about Blumea tulips in Virginia. So there's just really amazing stories, but it's really about thinking about who's producing your food,
right?
And thinking about the impact it has on the environment or those communities, whether it's taking dollars to build healthcare facilities or getting a school bus for kids whose parents work on those farms. It's just great. And we're really excited to keep doing it because millions of dollars already have benefited those workers and communities and farms. And we were excited to continue to grow it.
Well, that's the amazing thing when you think about the number of Whole Foods across the nation and what it looks like to support a farm that's doing it right and taking care of their workers and to know that those purchase orders are directly affecting their livelihood and their well-being and that they're putting back into the ground and the soil, all of that goodness, that must have been a really special trip to.
Yeah, it was. And that's a conversation for another day. Our Whole Planet Foundation is our nonprofit that does microcredit lending, but it was a special trip. I got to spend a month in Costa Rica and got to meet a lot of great people and see work on the ground. And to your point, I mean, the farms and those communities might have different focus. So, you know, it might be on the environment or it might be particularly on worker welfare, but all of those connections and programs are, and I think as a consumer, to have that connection through Whole Foods Market and to be able to vote with your dollars about things that you value is, it really, for me, makes grocery shopping even more fun and meaningful.
Well, and there's something about it with, I think, our generation too of young moms and who just, and I think even the younger generations below us who really are connecting their purchases with their power. It is your purchase is a vote. It's a vote for something.
Yeah.
And to know that I see a green sticker on my banana, I know it's Source for Good, throw it in the cart. And I don't have that personal connection of being at that farm, but knowing that program and what's going into it is important to me. And that's one of the reasons why I love Whole Foods. But I think the quality of knowing that there are certain things too that you're not including, like the high fructose corn syrup for people that feel overwhelmed by food choices. I know you guys did a consumer report and or did a survey this year in the summer. And I'd love for you to share those results if you have them. I know that I was surprised, but I have them if you don't have them.
I don't have them.
Okay. It was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing to see that the average mom spends close to 30 minutes a week looking at food labels.
Yeah.
And for me, that resonated really deeply, but I care about nutrition. So I'm probably spending more than 30 minutes a week looking at labels.
I get you.
You're probably spending just as much time, but can we talk about some other ingredients other than high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated oils that you aren't going to find on Whole Foods shelves?
Yeah. So I think one of the things, and thank you for reminding me of that consumer study, reducing that work is that, you know, we ban over 150 ingredients in food. We ban over 100 ingredients in household cleaning products. We ban over 100 in body care. We ban over 100 in supplements. And so for me, that peace of mind is invaluable where actually I spend a lot of time immersed in labels and thinking lots of things at work. But if I when I go shop at a Whole Foods Market or when my husband or somebody else takes my list, I don't have to worry about it. Because as soon as they walk in the door, they know there's no bleached or bromated flour. There's no high fructose corn syrup. There's no partially hydrogenated fats. There's no FD&C colors, right? So you're not going to find electric blue yogurt or cereal at Whole Foods Market. You know, if you're thinking about Halloween candy or holiday treats, that's not an ingredient that you have to worry about. And you know that we have incredible sourcing standards for meat and seafood. And so that trust from our customers is so important. And they tell us it's important. You know, sometimes they're like, I don't need to know the details. I just know it's there and I can go in and I can relax a little bit and I don't have to look as closely at labels, which for me, you know, it relieves, I don't have to work all the time. Although I can't always, I can't resist sometimes studying.
And, yeah.
You know, when you're passionate about your work, like you are, you end up kind of spending time doing those things. But other ingredients, like for instance, sunscreen. So there are two in, you know, if you're looking for sunscreen for your kiddos, we don't have oxybenzone or octinoxate. Those have been linked to impacts on marine ecosystems. And we got rid of them, one in 2017, one in 2019. And then subsequently, the state of Hawaii also banned them, and now Key West, Florida. And so coming in and knowing, oh, I'm going to pick up a sunscreen, and those ingredients aren't there, and I don't have to think about it, or there's not going to be chlorine or phosphates in a cleaning product I pick up, I think gives people a lot of peace of mind. Or I don't have to worry if I, you know, some people want to avoid sweeteners like saccharin, and so they know I don't have to worry about that when I'm shopping at Whole Foods Market. Or if I buy lunch meat for my kiddo's lunch, I don't have to worry about added synthetic nitrites or nitrates. And it takes a lot of load off, right? Yeah. Like, as a mom, you're thinking about those things. I mean, I think about the food my 1-year-old is getting more than my husband. Partly that's my career, but it's just my nature to worry about it more.
Yeah. I mean, there's no worry like a mom's worry.
No. Sometimes about the silly things, right? Yeah.
There's so much freedom before kids to not worry. You're like, oh, I got this all figured out. And you have kids and you're like, wait, I need to look at every label. What are they wearing? What are we using? You start cleaning out every cabinet in your house. And what's interesting too, is when I think about working with clients and going into their home and they pull out like the cardboard box of supplements, or we open the pantry and they're like, oh, well, I just like grabbed that at a convenience store, or like, I want one of those large stores that has a pharmacy in it, you know, and they just start walking down the supplement aisle and they snag something and it's amazing to me still how often people are purchasing because of marketing and because of something on a label, or just they're looking for something and they're just trying to pick the best from the shelf. And I would say, like, to have that peace of mind to walk into a Whole Foods, if a client's like, oh yeah, I grabbed this at Whole Foods, I definitely feel more confident that it's higher quality and less of a knee-jerk reaction to say, let's purge this pantry, or let's purge this supplement, your medicine cabinet, just because of your quality standards. So, I mean, it definitely makes purchasing a lot easier. But what might surprise listeners about your standards that we might as consumers not know about?
Yeah, I think, a lot. One, that we have a team that does this, right? So, and I want to be clear, we don't purchase product for Whole Foods Market. Our quality standards team, our job is to really set the fences, and our buyers work inside those parameters when they're sourcing product. And it's a partnership with them, but
lay down the hammer.
And occasionally, but we try not to do that. We're working together and they have that expertise as well. But so we kind of set the fences so that we have a team where there's 20 of us right now. It grows and shrinks over the years, but those 20 people have over 270 years of experience at Whole Foods Market. My team is so deeply rooted and committed. And I don't think people know that. We take this so seriously. And this is also about what we want to see on shelf. We take that responsibility to our consumers seriously. And then I think the depth of the research, the conversations, the connection to NGOs, academics, industry technical experts, our suppliers, in shaping and evolving our standards, whether that's ingredients or, you know, when you're talking about some of the more complex stuff like seafood or eggs, that it's happening. I don't think most people know. And they're just like, oh, it's Whole Foods, it's higher quality. But it's just how deep we're going and what we look at. And we really try to root our work in reality, right? So when you have all those connections and you're talking to all the important stakeholders, then you're making standards that I, as I mentioned before, push forward, but also are based in like, and that's why sometimes, you know, there's consumers are like, why is this ingredient allowed here and not allowed here? And it's really particular to that industry. Yeah. So I think mostly just the breadth of what we're doing, that we have a program like Source for Good, that we have really rigorous standards for farm-raised seafood in our seafood department, that cage-free eggs don't cut it in our dairy department, that everything is beyond cage-free when you shop eggs at Whole Foods Market, or that we even have household cleaning product standards. I don't think anyone realizes that it's curated based on those ingredient standards. And so I could go on and on, but I just think people in general don't know.
Yeah. I mean, well, can we break down just a couple categories? Because you mentioned eggs, you mentioned farm seafood, and I would like to dip back into meat because I know you have your steps 1 through 5. And if anyone's into a Whole Food Market behind the meat section, they'll see the steps. And I think a lot of people assume farm seafood is really bad for you. And then they get to the eggs and they go, I don't know what to buy. I'm going to buy organic, but then this one says pasture raised. So can we yeah. dip into each one of these categories? And can you yeah. explain what the steps are for meat and what your standards are for farm seafood? And then you can give us the details on eggs. Cause I hear that you know a lot about eggs.
I'm really excited about it. We eat a lot of eggs in our household. Well, let's take seafood. So two things are happening in seafood. We have a sustainable wild caught program. Greenpeace has done this report called Carting Away the Oceans. They've done it, I think, 9 times. We've taken number 1, 5 out of the 9, most recently when they released in 2018. And so everything that's wild caught, even if it's like in that, you know, frozen case next to the seafood counter, is either Marine Stewardship Council certified or a green or a yellow on Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. No red rated species, haven't had them since 2012. Red rated are things like shark or orange roughy, or it could be a species like octopus where when it's coming from some areas, it's red and some areas it's green, right? And then you are correct. A lot of people think farm-raised seafood is really bad for you and farm-raised seafood has really bad rap. And sometimes that's dessert. But why do we feel aquaculture is really important? Because ocean stock, river stock, it continues to be depleted, right? It's continued to fall over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And I don't know if it'll ever come back in the same way. The appetite for seafood is as high as it's ever been, right? And so how do you balance those things? We think aquaculture and wild caught are important, right? What aquaculture, when it's done right, can do is provide a really high quality, reliable source of seafood year round. It can, in some communities where you might have seen a disappearance of fishing, you potentially have new industry and businesses starting. It's one of the fastest growing sectors of food in the world. So our standards are called responsibly farmed. It's for all aquaculture in our case. And some standards are common across all, like no antibiotics and no added growth hormones and no mammalian or poultry byproduct and feed. So even though salmon is a carnivorous fish, you can't give it chicken dinner, right? Yeah. So there's things like that, looking at water quality, impacts to local environment. So if you're talking about shrimp farm in Southeast Asia and having consideration for sensitive mangrove forests around those farms. And then you have species specific standards. All of this, by the way, is on the website. So if people really want to download, dig in, get some fun reading. They can go line by line for bivalve mollusks to learn what the standards are. But, you know, farm raising clams is different than farm raised salmon is different than farm-raised tilapia. So then you're going to see standards very specific to finfish versus shellfish, et cetera. So we're really proud of those standards and work, and they're considered in the industry to be the highest. I think a lot of farms want to work with us, and there's a lot of incredible farm-raised seafood producers out there that are doing really important and good work.
It's so good to know, just because you think about farm-raised salmon and the additives they're getting to have red flesh, or, you know, the containment and where they're growing. And I think you're right. Like a conventional farm versus a regenerative farm for produce, it's so drastically different in what it can look like.
Yeah, we do allow, I think it's anthocyanins or fafia yeast that you can add to the feed. Salmon in the wild are going to get that pink color from things they're eating, and you're just not going to get it in a farm-raised situation. So, but it would be in the feed, not afterwards, and it wouldn't be a dye. So, because consumers will not buy gray salmon.
No.
Right? I'm just not going to do it. But yeah, I do want to make sure people know that. And they'll see that disclaimer that we allow certain, and you can see that again in the standards, added color and feed, but only specific
food grade. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about your eggs, and we'll talk about the step program with your meats.
Sure. So eggs, we first went cage free in our dairy case in 2003 or 2004, which is well ahead of the rest of the industry. You can buy cage-free eggs, I think, in most retailers now. You see a lot of restaurant chains making those commitments. But we decided several years ago, while cage-free could be an improvement, it might not be a significant welfare change for the birds. And we wanted to do more. So we started working on that. The result is our animal welfare standards for laying hens. I know that's a mouthful, which we first rolled out in our own brand, 365. And since we have now reached all of our branded eggs must meet those standards as well. So they are welcome to get other certifications, but they have to go through our program. There are four production systems that we currently have: cage-free plus, outdoor access, pasture-raised, and outdoor living. And what we really feel strongly about our program is that you talked about the confusion with labels and what does it mean? And can free range mean something for this supplier and it means something else for another supplier? What is so incredible about our program is that you can know exactly how they were raised. You can open up a carton for 365. It's going to give you some brief bullets on it, and then it's a 40-page document on the public website.
Yeah.
Again, if that's your passion. And then for branded, you would see a shelf tag that tells you what that system is, and then you can go look. But it's very specific. And so making sure, you know, that birds can fulfill their natural instincts and that they have space and they have quality litter and they're having access to water and feed. And if they're going outdoors, how many hours are they spending outdoors every day? And do you have a record of that? And so really digging into those systems, going to those farms, all of them are audited to meet our standards. And we're just really excited. So if you're just coming to us and say, I'm a local producer and I'm cage free and I want to sell in your dairy case, we'd say, that's not enough. What else? And really diving into that for their welfare. And really, really proud of that program. As I said, we have a lot of eggs in our house. So sometimes they're from friends that have backyard hens, but most of the time I'm buying 365 or a couple local suppliers whose farms I've been on here in Austin.
So good to hear you say 365, just because I think when people think about a white label brand for a big grocery store, or, you know, just it kind of feels like, well, is that specialty? Is that as high of quality standards? Can you explain the standards for the 365 brand and what we can expect?
Yeah. So I would say, by and large, so our customers know, our standards don't fold for anyone, right? So they apply to a private label, they apply to branded. And what is great about 365, it meets all those ingredient standards, is that we often can pioneer standards there, right? So egg standards we did with our own brand. It was really important to us. And we can take those learnings and then expand out to branded or our sustainable canned tuna program. So if you're a mom or a dad and you like to eat canned tuna for yourself or for your kiddo, every can you buy in our store, or if you go over to the prep foods counter, is one bag cash, which preserves jobs in coastal communities and means virtually no bycatch. That program we did first in 365 tuna, and then, you know, expanding outwards. And so that's one of the things I really love there. We have a great product development team, and they try to push, you know, making products that our consumers want, and also meeting that those standards is really important. So really proud of that brand. It's a good quality as anything.
I love that. It sounds like when you think about the 365 brand and you think about, I mean, whether that's a canned tuna or cage-free plus style eggs, yeah. It doesn't seem, you know, I think what people, I mean, when you don't know something, and I'll just be frank, when you don't know something and you walk in and you go like, I want the best for my kid, a lot of times you associate the best with being the most expensive. And you're like, oh, well, I'm not going to go for this one, I'm going to go for the one that's a dollar more because I think that that means that it's better. And what I think I hear you saying is that all the products across the board are meeting rigorous standards, higher quality than you're going to see in other grocery stores, removing ingredients that you guys don't stand for, making sure that they are better than the baseline anywhere else, and that you don't necessarily have to do that at Whole Foods.
Yeah. And that's absolutely true. And I think you bring up a good point, which is that as moms, one of the things we're always thinking about as parents, as dads too, is budget. Every family has a different budget. And there's always going to be that tension between your budget, what is financially right for your family, and your values potentially, and what you want in your food or anything for that matter. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. The 365 brands, it's going to meet those high quality standards, whether it's your pantry staples or 365 pasture raised eggs. And it is going to often be a lower price point than that branded product. And we really are about offering different choices to our consumers. As you know, in your work, no one way to eat is right for everyone. And we all have different ways we like to approach food, enjoy food, experience food, or need to for certain health reasons. And so having choices, but all of them meeting those standards is really important.
Absolutely. So can we circle back to the step one through five meat program?
Yeah.
Just because I feel like that probably has a way longer attached PDF to the website. But we would love the Cliff Notes.
Yeah. So the Cliff Notes. So one of the things, you know, you talked about what would surprise people about our standards. We started restricting antibiotics and added growth hormones in meat in 1981 when we first started selling meat. Long, long before that was a conversation. Yeah. So we have our baseline meat standards for the department. And that's looking at things like no cages or crates or tethering, no antibiotics, no added growth hormones for those species that it applies to, no animal byproduct, right, from processing allowed in feed, and several other standards, 2/3 of life on pasture for beef and for ruminant animals like beef and lamb. And then we have that additional requirement that you're referring to. And we have that for basically five most commonly eaten species in our fresh case, which is lamb, chicken, turkey, beef, and pork. Those suppliers have to go through a program called Global Animal Partnerships Animal Welfare Certified Program. There are well over 100 standards that they have to meet. And you're referring to the steps. So the first entry certification for Global Animal Partnership is just called Animal Welfare Certified now. And then there are additional things that a supplier can do to earn a higher rating, right? So you might be, I don't know, a step two or three on chicken, or you might see a producer that's Animal Welfare Certified for beef, or maybe they're step four for beef. It involves different things, any, you know, transport time or time outside, or there's certain enrichments, like, you know, animals, farm animals like to play with toys too, not just cats and dogs. They like things to do, and you could be looking, there's a number of things that they're looking at. And so that's what the steps are referring to. Anything is a good choice. Anything's a good choice. You know, when it's gone through Global Animal Partnership, it's meeting over 100 animal welfare standards, and you can go to their website. You can go to our website, but you can also go to Global Animal Partnership to get in some of those details if you're really wanting to get in further without getting too deep into animal husbandry. So I don't know if that's
the clip notes. Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I love knowing that these animals are spending 2/3 of their life on pasture and that there are so many rigorous standards. I think that's one of those departments where you walk in and you're like, well, I'm going to look for a 5 because,
yeah,
you know, whether you source your protein in a grocery store or outside of one, like if you want to serve your family protein and you don't have protein in your house, you're going in and going, how do I do this? How do I pick this? And I think people can be sold on the no added antibiotics and or growth hormone in chicken and be like, this is great. And they may not know that that's an FDA standard. So those are the kind of things where that is really helpful and probably really complex and difficult to message to your consumers.
It's really hard. And sometimes, you know, people don't want to talk about the details of the way the pork industry historically has used confinement, or they don't want to know about animal alterations, right? Or ear matching with a tag. They don't want to know those details, but those are all really important to suppliers and something to consider when we're talking about, you know, our programs are really focused on outcomes, acknowledging there is no one way, right? Suppliers have different climates, different size of farms. They're doing different things. And so making sure we're focused on the welfare outcome and not necessarily these every single tiny little rule, acknowledging there's that allows innovation. But to your point, step 5 is actually really hard. It's really, really hard. And there aren't that many suppliers that can get Global Animal Partnership step 5 or step 5 plus. And it's not right for everybody. It's potentially a different way. And the other thing I talked about before, it's about choices, right? Like for some consumers, grain finished beef, that's the taste they like, you know, versus grass fed or finished beef, or just cost. It's always going to cost more to have step 4 beef than it is to step 1 because of those additional requirements under Global Animal Partnership. So it's about choices, it's about taste, it's about cost to the consumer. And also to your point, figuring out what makes sense for your family or what are your values. But I like to reiterate, any choice is a good choice in that case. Know that it meets our baseline and welfare standards, and then it has for those species that additional requirement.
I love that. I love knowing your baseline is above the norm and that it's like rigorously audited to meet your standards. It's just a relief as a mom, especially. I mean, I could probably talk to you forever about every single category that you purchase for and quality test for, but what would you say excites you about your work the most? And how do you see the industry shifting in like 5 to 10 years?
I'm excited about so much. But one thing we already talked about is Source for Good. By and large, just diving deeper into social accountability and responsible sourcing, using the learnings from Sourcing for Good, but also where can we dig deeper? 365 packaged coffee and teas is ethically sourced. What does it mean? You know, looking at the rest of packaged coffee potentially and thinking about, you know, advancements you can make there, looking at chocolate. So really excited about that work. Regenerative agriculture, which to sum up for people, you could be organic, you could be biodynamic, you could be a conventional farm. These are practices that are focused on soil health. So something like tilling the land, which a lot of us do in gardens, can have impacts on erosion or microorganisms living in soil, which are really important. So potentially no-till. And so practices like that, we've made a big commitment to regenerative right now. Read about it on our website. But there's two things we want to do there. We want to support suppliers to grow the movement, to connect them to other suppliers, but then I'm doing this work for a really long time. But we also want to prevent greenwashing of regenerative claims. And so having our consumers know when you pick up a product in our store, what we're working on right now is making sure that we know that those producers are actually following soil health practices or potentially have a certification so that you can know that that claim is meaningful. So those are huge. We're looking into packaging in ways we haven't looked at before, continuing to evolve ingredient standards. So those are just a handful of things. But like I said, man, I am so lucky. I have a really kick-ass job. And I work with some really brilliant, brilliant people who are far smarter than me and really committed. Yeah. And the other thing is, and you know, what I love about working at Whole Foods Market is like, it's not 5 to 10 years away for us. Like it's now, right? We're always working on what's now. But as we talked about before, in like, for instance, eggs, the industry shifting, I think, as you know, in your work, consumers want to know more and more and more about not only what are the ingredients, but where did it come from? How is it raised? Can I know the farm? They're looking for radical transparency. And I think you'll continue to see that. I think people are asking questions about body care, household cleaning. People are even looking at like, what's in my alcohol? How does that impact me? Right. So I think you're going to continue to see all of that. But as I said, we're really right now into responsible sourcing, regenerative agriculture, and a whole host of other initiatives that we're excited about.
Feels like you've always been into sustainability at Whole Foods, but I think it's regenerative ag and packaging and radical transparency. Like that is a push for sustainability that I think you are leading the movement in, if you will. Like it just, if people knowing how many Whole Foods markets are out there, and if they want to be on the shelves at Whole Foods and get in front of their consumers, like you said, people will change a formulation to do it. Like that's pretty powerful. You have a big responsibility. Your role is, that's a heavy role, Jamie.
Yeah. And we're really excited. We just brought in a new VP of corporate social responsibility. So we're really stoked about that, because when you talk about like a word like sustainability, we actually really like to get into the specifics instead of a big broad word that, you know, a lot of consumers don't understand. And so talking about the soil health practices or having a company talk about their food waste aversion. So we're really stoked to continue to bring those different approaches in different parts of our company together and see what more we can do.
I love it. Well, thank you for all that you're doing right now and for pushing the envelope and pushing your suppliers to do better, because you're obviously a huge chain of grocery stores that has a lot of power. And so you have a lot of responsibility, and I'm grateful to know you, to have gotten through the fortress and to know
it felt like a fortress.
I totally
get that. But inside we're huggy, friendly, nice, you know, hippie people.
Were you going to call yourself a tree hugger?
Well, I don't know if I'm, I think that could potentially be a compliment. I don't think I necessarily live up to being a tree hugger, but pre-pandemic, we like to give hugs, at least on my team.
Greeting with hugs.
There's just a lot of love.
There is a lot of love
going around at Whole Foods. Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you for all that you do. And I will link all of the quality standards in the show notes. So if people really want to dive deep on the 40-page egg deep dive, they're able to do that and find out
farm-raised clams.
Yeah. Find out where their clams are raised. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jamie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Be Well by Kelly. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at bewellbykelly.com and follow me on Instagram at bewellbykelly. I would love if you picked up my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. They're sold on Amazon and at all major booksellers.